It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro says his armed forces crushed a brief attack on a military base led by a rebellious former army officer, at least one man killed during the fight. Maduro declared the attack an act of terrorism financed by the United States and Colombia, but he gave no evidence of that claim. We asked Georgia State University America's scholar Jennifer McCoy if this attack was a surprise.
With the situation as it is, it's quite volatile in the country, and with a new body that is considered by many to be illegitimate, this constituent assembly that was elected, there will certainly be opposition to that, not only from the political opposition who has rejected it, but I would imagine from within the security forces as well.
One of the tasks of the new assembly is to rewrite Venezuela's constitution. Opponents believe it will create a permanent socialist dictatorship. 4 months of anti-government protests there have left more than 120 people dead. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said today the best step North Korea could take to signal it is ready for dialogue would be to stop its missile testing. Meantime, the U.S. has cautiously welcomed China's support of new U.N. sanctions against North Korea, but said that it would only be watching, monitoring it closely, China's compliance with the penalties intended to deprive North Korea of $1 billion that fuel its nuclear and ballistic missile program. At least 11 people were killed, several more wounded in an attack at a church in southeastern Nigeria. It appears to have been caused by a personal feud between two people in the community. The gunman's apparent target was not in the church at the time of the attack. This is VOA News. An Iranian soldier opened fire on his comrades at a military firing range south of Tehran, killing 4, wounding several others, no motive given. State television said it either was an accident or the result of a mental problem. Last month, another soldier opened fire, killing 3 military personnel. Israel has announced its plan to ban the Al Jazeera news network. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has accused the Qatar-based media outlet of inciting violence at holy sites in Jerusalem. David Lesh is a history professor at Trinity University in Texas.
For the Israelis, the move also appeases its burgeoning anti-Iran alliance with some Arab states, including Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And as we know, they are in a bit of a rift with Qatar, and have demanded and expelled in the past Al Jazeera out of their states, as well as Egypt and Jordan.
Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Bahrain broke off diplomatic ties with Qatar earlier last month, accusing Doha of funding terrorism in the region and of being too close to Iran, Doha denying all of that. Russia says the U.S. is soon sending an envoy for negotiations over unrest in eastern Ukraine to Moscow for talks about the ongoing violence. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov made the announcement after an hour-plus meeting on the sidelines of the ASEAN ministerial conference in Manila with U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. It was the first high-level contact between the two countries since President Trump last week reluctantly signed new sanctions into law to punish Moscow for interfering in last year's U.S. presidential election. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence has denied a New York Times report suggesting he's considering running for president in 2020, calling it disgraceful and offensive. New York Times story said some Republicans were moving to form a shadow campaign for 2020, as though President Trump were not involved. It said multiple advisors to Pence have already said party donors that Pence would plan to run if Trump did not. Kellyanne Conway is an advisor to President Trump, appearing on the ABC News program this week.
That is complete fiction. That is complete fabrication. And I know that his advisors, who had comments attributed to them, have pushed back very strongly, as has the vice president, and as am I right now, unequivocally. Vice President Pence is a very loyal, very dutiful, but also incredibly effective vice president, active vice president.
Pence also said he plans to focus all his efforts on advancing the Trump agenda and on seeing him reelected in 2020.
That's the latest world news from VOA. morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today's Monday, August 7th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Rwanda's Electoral Commission declared incumbent President Paul Kagame as winner with over 98% of the vote.
As per provisional results of the outcome of the presidential elections, the winner of this election is His Excellency Kagame Paul with 98.63%.
Kalisa Mbanda is the head of Rwanda's National Electoral Commission. Meanwhile, Kenyans prepare to go to the polls in one of the most closely watched electoral races on the continent. But some members of Kenya's opposition and the public question the ability of the Independent Electoral Commission to conduct the polls free of undue influence.
Kenyans have had a hard time believing that they can completely trust the Electoral Commission, especially members of the opposition, sympathizing with the opposition candidates. And of course, things have been made worse by the opposition candidates telling their voters that there are schemes to try and rig this election.
Voice of America's reporter Vincent Makori in Nairobi. And in the southern eastern part of Nigeria, 11 people were killed and 18 others critically wounded in an attack on a church. Those stories, plus Samson Omalley's sports, are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Rwanda's longtime president, Paul Kagame, was declared winner for a third term in office. Electoral authorities said Kagame won 98.63% of the vote. Neither of his two challengers won a full percentage point. The Rwanda National Electoral Commission said that over 90% of the country's 6.9 million registered voters cast their ballots. Mugume Davis Rwakarinji reports.
As per provisional results of the outcome of the presidential elections of the Republic of Rwanda, the winner of this election is His Excellency Kagame Paul with 98.63%. We now know the leader of this country for the next term of office.
That was the head of Rwanda's National Electoral Commission announcing the winner of the Rwanda's presidential elections. According to final provision results, the incumbent president, Paul Kagame, received 98.63% votes and was followed by Philip Maimana with 0.73%, while Frank Habineza polled 0.47% votes. The National Electoral Commission Executive Secretary, Charles Munyaneza, says at least 90% of the electorate participated in this election. This represents 6.6 million Rwandans.
We are satisfied that you can see Rwandans stand up in a very, very high number. You could see the calmness, you could see the cleanliness at the polling stations. You could see the people are celebrating. Therefore, and we are satisfied with the conduct of candidates, their agents, not only during the elections, but also during the campaigns.
While addressing his supporters this weekend, President Kagame said the overwhelming support he received was a proof enough that Rwandans still approve of his leadership. Critics blame him for silencing opposition and media. While addressing media in Kigali this Saturday, presidential contender Frank Habineza of the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda, or DGPR, conceded defeat.
As a Democrat, I'd like to take on this opportunity to congratulate the RPF candidate, Paul Kagame, for the victory and wish him all the best. I urge all Rwandans who unreservedly supported us to remain calm, united and peaceful as we move forward together as a nation.
Despite the defeat, Habineza believes the campaign still yielded some fruits.
Our campaign was good, well organized, and we invested in our resources and energy as much as possible. Although we had a few challenges at the beginning, we were finally able to reach every part of the country as we had planned. It was indeed a healthy learning process, and we used this experience to make DGPR an even stronger party.
Final results are expected to be announced before the end of this week. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji.
The United States government praised Rwandans for carrying out peaceful elections. However, it says that it was, quote, disturbed by irregularities observed during voting in the election. A State Department statement on Saturday says that the U.S. remains, quote, concerned by the lack of transparency in determining the eligibility of prospective candidates, end quote. In Rwanda's capital, Kigali, VOA Central Africa Service reporter Edward Rema tells me that even though many in the country were not surprised at the landslide victory of the incumbent President Paul Kagame, there was jubilation as the results were announced.
I would say that the mood is one of celebration. Though many expected the results that we had were President Paul Kagame won by a landslide with 98.63%. Though people expected that, but after the final provisional results was announced, there was celebrations all over. People were driving around, making noise, chanting pro-RPF songs, stuff like that. So I would say that it is something that most people expected, but that did not stop them from celebrating anyway.
What has been the reaction of the two opposition candidates who were running in this election? What did they say about the results?
The two opposition candidates both accepted and conceived defeat. And in fact, the first one to concede defeat was independent candidate Philippe Maimana, who immediately after the partial election results were announced, he went on national television and conceded and congratulated President Paul Kagame. That did not happen for a Green Party candidate. He waited until Saturday, where he called a news conference and also conceded defeat and say congratulate Kagame, but said there were few problems that he thought should be addressed in the next elections. Some of those were where he said that some of his observers were not allowed to enter some polling stations, which he thought was not right.
Did it surprise him that he came in third, given that his party has had a longer presence in the politics of the country, and he was thought to have a bigger network, mobilizational power than Philippe Maimana?
I mean, he was surprised, and this is something that surprised almost everyone that I spoke to. They expected Frank Habineza to get a few more votes than he did get. And that's why he also said that the fact that his observers were not allowed in some polling stations raised some questions as to why he got what he got.
Any word from the international observers who came in from, say, neighboring countries?
I would say that these elections, according to the National Electoral Commission, attracted close to 2,000 observers. Of those, I was told that around 400 were international. So far, the observers from the East African community, COMESA and African Union, have all said that they didn't find anything unusual during these elections. Most of them said that the elections were free, fair, and peaceful. But one thing I would mention is that the U.S. government issued a statement this Saturday, saying that there were few problems that were mentioned or that were talked about that made these elections a little bit questionable.
What was the reaction of the Rwandan government to that statement?
The Rwandan government hasn't issued any official reaction, but when you go on Twitter, there's been a lot of response from different people actually saying that the United States government has no moral or has no reason at all to question what happened in Rwanda, because they never sent any election observers here.
That was VOA Central Africa Service reporter Edward Rwema. He was speaking to me from Rwanda's capital, Kigali. And Kenyans are getting ready to head to the polls tomorrow in an election that pits what observers say are two political heavyweights. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta is facing former Prime Minister Raila Odinga in one of the most closely watched elections on the continent. However, many in the opposition are raising questions about the capacity of the independent electoral body to carry out the process without undue influence. From Kenya's capital, Nairobi, Voice of America reporter Vincent Makori tells me that local polling shows that the candidates are running neck and neck. I know this has been a very contentious campaign period in Kenya. Lots has been going on. Candidates, both of them, quite strong. Who looks like they have an upper hand, according to local polls?
You know, according to local polls, actually, it's a neck and neck kind of race at this moment. There have been two polls which have shown the two to be literally 1% ahead of each other. One showed Mr. Uhuru Kenyatta, the current president, who's running for a second term, winning by about 1%, and the other poll shows Raila Odinga winning by about the same. So if you go by the polls, it looks like it's going to be a really, really close race. It might be one of those that just a few thousands of votes could make the difference between who loses and wins at this time.
Mm. Now, obviously, there have been also some issues, controversies with the Electoral Commission. Recently in the news has been the death of the IT manager. How confident is the public that the Electoral Commission, Independent Electoral Commission, is going to be able to do their job of tallying the votes, given that it might come to just a few thousands in terms of the difference of the winner and the loser?
You know, people have been trying, let me say, really trying to believe that the Electoral Commission will deliver the elections in a fashion that will be considered free, fair, and credible. But historically, looking at the last two elections, Kenyans have had a hard time believing that they can completely trust the Electoral Commission, especially members of the opposition, sympathizers of the opposition candidates. And, of course, things have been made worse by the opposition candidates telling their voters that there are schemes to try and rig this election. And that was even cemented further, that fear, by the killing of Mr. Chris Musando, who was the brain behind the IT systems, or rather, it's not like he created the system, but rather he was the man who was ensuring that nobody can possibly infiltrate the electronic system to manipulate the figures when it comes to the transmission of the numbers or the votes that will be cast on that particular day. But then, at the same time, many believe that this current electoral body has got some more commitment and a bit more of credibility, and therefore they believe that it possibly has the capacity to deliver a free and fair, credible election. Their only concern is that suppose some really smart crook manages to infiltrate the system. Can anybody else in the system, in the IEBC, the Electoral Commission body, prevent it now that the man was seen as the genius, the real protector of the system, Mr. Chris Musando, has been murdered? So it's a mixed feeling. There is a sense of confidence in the Electoral Commission itself, but there's concern about their vulnerability in terms of infiltration by smart hackers who may look determined to have this election tipping in favor, particularly of the ruling party.
Now, you say that the current president, Uhuru Kenyatta, has a bit of an edge according to local polling. What is it, according to you, according to what you have seen, what is it that gives him the edge, aside from, I guess, the power of incumbency?
Well, I think one of the things that one can look at and kind of maybe through that try to get an understanding of what's going on is the background. I mean, both of these men, actually have kind of come from a big, powerful ethnic groups, and ethnicity is playing a really big part, and there is a coalitions that have been formed during this election round, just like always. And when you look at the numbers, of course, you know, the coalition that has been formed by the incumbent comprises of two of the major ethnic groups in Kenya. But at the same time, for anybody to win, of course, he has to cross over and get some votes from other regions of Kenya. The incumbent president has benefited to some degree from particularly infrastructural projects that were initiated by the previous administration, which actually was the administration of Mwai Kibaki and Raila Odinga.
Right.
At that time.
He was the prime minister at the time.
A coalition government.
Yeah.
Exactly. And somehow the president, having allowed or made sure that some of the projects have been implemented, he's been taking credit for that. The SGR, the rail system from Mombasa to Nairobi, some construction of roads here and there. But at the same time, they have had challenges in the past few months, shortages of food, price hikes in essential commodities that have given the advantage, or rather the opposition, or a very strong case to make against the current president and the government. And that's what really basically what makes things really tight, in that on each side, there have been things that have either disadvantaged them or given them some edge at this critical moment.
That was VOA reporter Vincent Makori talking to me from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Authorities in Nigeria said 11 people were killed and 18 others critically wounded in an attack on a church in the southern eastern part of the country. Anambra State Governor Willie Obiano said the attack stemmed from a feud between members of the local community who were living outside Nigeria. Nigeria's southeast is predominantly Christian, and the attack is a rare act of violence at the church. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, but police say they do not believe Boko Haram militants were behind it. Burundi and Tanzania are said to revive a joint commission to boost trade volumes between the two countries. The move is part of the East African Community Common Market Protocol on easing the free movement of goods in the region. Moses Havyarimana has this story.
Last month, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza made his first visit outside the country in 2 years since failed coup in 2015. He met with his counterpart John Pombe Magufuli in Ngara, Tanzania. Now, the two countries are set to revive the bilateral joint commission of cooperation, which last met in 2013 as part of the efforts to improve the trade volumes between the two East African countries. Burundi Foreign Affairs Minister Alain Nyamitwe said that the reviving of the commission was long overdue.
We have agreed to revive it, and we share that goal. The last commission met, we had just joined the East African community. There's a number of protocols that we have incorporated in our own legislation, which have implications in the way we do trade with our neighbors.
Mr. Nyamitwe said that very soon, given the current thematic engagement that Burundi have started with Tanzania, the two countries' government institutions will be meeting soon to tackle major impediments in trade, transport, finance and mining sectors.
Border traffic, which as you know has been enhanced by one-stop border post at Kobero. Most of our goods that come to Bujumbura go through Dar es Salaam harbour, take the road from Dar es Salaam to Bujumbura, so we therefore have many things to cover, you know, as we meet.
Burundi heavily rely on the Central Corridor route, where most of the country's imports are transported through. Rice, beans, wheat and oil are the major food that are imported from Tanzania through the Central Corridor to Burundi. The Bilateral Joint Commission of Cooperation is expected to revitalize a four-year-old report and implement aspects that arose in the last meeting in 2013, among which are the pillars of the East African Community Integration Process. Bujumbura said that the consultation with Tanzania will also feature a fast-tracking of the East African Community Protocol, especially on the free movement of goods and people. Mariam Kaneza is a trader in Bujumbura who deals in the importing of rice from Tanzania.
To cross the border with rice, sometimes we face challenges, spending a lot of time at the border for clearances and also high taxation and the Burundi Revenue Authority. And that's not the end. Still, we have to pay some taxes in the local communities, which is quite challenging for us to do the transborder trade.
As the Commission will be expected to sit soon to tackle bilateral issues between the two countries, free movement of people have been put in check as Tanzania will stop issuing citizenship to Burundians in effort to encourage them to repatriate to their country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the 2017 IWAF World Championships currently holding in London. The highlight of Sunday's lineup was a gold medal won by Kenya's Geoffrey Kipkuri Kirui in the men's world marathon, making up for his country's podium no-show in the last two championships. Kirui, this season's Boston Marathon winner, clocked 2 hours, 8 minutes, 27 seconds.
I was very happy. Yeah, I was more prepared because you have to train in somewhere hilly because of the hill work that you are running. When you are in 38K, you know, maybe the legs will be very tight to move. But then Tola tried to go, I leave him.
In the women's category, Bahrain's Rose Chilimo claimed gold in a dramatic manner to deny Edna Kiplagat's mission of becoming the first athlete to win 3 marathon world titles as she settled for silver. The 28-year-old Chilimo, a Kenyan-born athlete who qualified to compete for Bahrain last August, finished in 2 hours, 27 minutes, 11 seconds after resisting what looked like a decisive break from her 37-year-old Kenyan rival, Edna Kiplagat.
I tried so hard, I worked so hard, and the last 2 kilometers was too long for me, and it was slightly uphill, so I think I was a little bit tired.
On Saturday night, South African Luvo Mayunga won gold in a men's long jump. Mayunga, who only returned to former competition last year after overcoming a drug addiction. On Saturday, South African Luvo Mayunga won gold in the men's long jump with a leap of 8.48 meters. Ahead of his event tomorrow night, the world and Olympic champion South African Wayne van Niekerk admits the only person he fears is himself, even though he sailed through his 400-meter semifinal at the World Athletics Championship in London on Sunday night, winning in 44.22 seconds, he knows the task ahead of doubling up with the 200 meters is a massive one.
The 200 tomorrow,
yeah.
And then the 400 final. I am giving myself a tough time, I would lie to you. There's so much doubt, but at the same time, so much belief. So it's like a good and evil fight in my mind, but I'll pull through, I always do.
In basketball news, Team World scored a 108-97 victory over Team Africa in the 2017 NBA Africa game played at the Ticket Pro Dome in Johannesburg, South Africa on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this Monday, August the 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, in for James Batty, wishing you all a good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth review and discussion on the electoral process and results of the presidential elections in Rwanda and Kenya. Election fever in East Africa. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.